Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
I have really got serious problems with people who say, I'm going to plant a privacy barrier. Can you tell me a tree? In other words, they want to plant 12 of one thing. And I just don't think that serves you well. The trees are happy about it, but it doesn't really give you what you're looking for, which is to say, a view. You didn't want to look at whatever, the street, the neighbors, at my parents' house, it was the cotton field behind the house. You know, they wanted the house to have its own space around it. And as a result, we planted lots of interesting things, ligustrum hedges and magnolias and all kinds of things, but it wasn't as pretty as this because there was not so much flowering in it. So when you're thinking about planting a privacy barrier, think about flowers. Think about things that are going to be sturdy, things that are going to live a long time, but also things that you're going to enjoy looking at. I think that's a wonderful thing. CL, I'm hoping we can get CL in, but she does radio on Saturday morning, so it's kind of hard to have an interview with her. Anyway, today's a lot of things, y'all. This is a busy one, so that's my first shout-out. My second shout-out is to the COO and Chief Legal Counsel of Supertalk, where we all work, of TeleSouth. And Ashley Tullis Fortenberry has just accepted. This is a hard thing to say yes to, but she is going to be on the board of directors of the National Association of Broadcasters representing our district here. That's a big deal, and I appreciate her doing that. They're lucky. She's amazing. So shout out to Ashley today. There's oh, you're going to see a bunch of stuff at Supertalk TV, supertalk.tv today. The picture that you just put up a moment ago, Lance, is of the paving tiles that they have developed in Germany for commercial use. I've seen this done in a couple of places, but it was real labor intensive, and the individuals just had to absolutely want it to be there. But this is my dream, is that parking lots would not only be green and therefore cooler, but that would give the opportunity for the rain, hello rain, to get into the surface, past the surface of the soil, and perhaps allay some of this flooding that we're seeing now across the South. If our water could drop into the earth where it falls, rather than having to run down miles and miles and actually do us more damage than it would do if it was absorbed where it fell. So this is another German, Rosengittenstein. I tried to, no, I didn't pronounce that right. I'm terrible.
Rosengittenstein.
I'm terrible at that. You're better. But it's a brilliant idea, and it's one that I have appreciated seeing in a couple of people's yards, driveways, but I've never seen it on a commercial level like this. So I'm very happy about that.
It is really cool. I wish things looked like that. All, you know, like every
parking lot. That's
what
I'm saying.
Right?
That's what I'm saying. You still mow it. You know what I mean? But it's not like you're growing a weed patch, but the lattices are set up, the grids are set up so that the water goes into the earth. Think about how much good that could do for all of us, especially right now. Good grief. It's still raining.
I mean, it's going to continue.
I'm not going to ask you to be Woody Asaph for me today, but I have to tell you that I heard David Hartman was retiring. I think we're going to have to get him on the phone from time to time on Saturday. His wife and I are garden friends. And I have to tell you, this is a weather pattern that we are not liking.
No, won't stop either.
No, I guess that's really the problem, is it has become a pattern. Exactly 37 years ago today, I was lucky enough to be recovering from having just given birth. My baby is now, of all things, 37 years old. Can you imagine?
I just wish it would slow down, you know?
You're trying to turn back time for us, huh?
Just turn it down a little, right?
Have to call you Cher.
I don't care about going back. You just slow it down a little bit.
Well, time is definitely moving along quicker than most of us wanted here lately, particularly. Except, of course, for the water. I mean, let's face it. The water is giving us big problems. Meanwhile, my friends in New Mexico, where it has not rained for 3 months, are like, could you just send it to us? You know? Well, we can't, but we would like to, believe me. We would very much like to.
Yeah, I'd share some of the rain. Yeah.
Truly,
if we could
truly.
Do that, that'd be ingenious.
It would be real smart. Now, I don't know how to tell you this, but in addition to tomorrow being Father's Day, which is a big deal, call your dad, go over, cook for him, do whatever it is you can do. Tomorrow is, we got a weekend, and Lance, I don't know how to tell you this, but you're going to be really fat, happy, and broke by the end of it.
Uh-oh.
Yep, this is National Dog Dad Day today.
Yeah, yeah. He's with me. He's uh-huh. he's real
but
it, excited.
But it's also Ugliest Dog Day, and since none of your dogs qualify for that, you have to just
all appreciate. Dogs are awesome, man.
You just have to appreciate it.
Yeah.
But coming up tomorrow, and I know this is because it's Father's Day, this is just so perfect. I mean, after all, there's millions and millions of dog dads. I'll get you the number here in a minute. I looked it up. But it is, tomorrow is National Dog Party Day, but it's also National Wagyu Beef Day.
Okay.
So is it going to be you or the dog? Because I'm not sure how that works, but it has something to do with Father's Day.
Steak bone from yesterday. Boy, yeah, he enjoyed that.
See,
we took dad to,
not wild.
To a steakhouse and
see,
I ordered the steak that
celebrate.
Had the big bone in
gotta
it.
Gotta celebrate. To, yeah.
Just to make sure I had some leftover for the dude here, and he
sure.
loved it, man.
That's fun. That's a really fun thing. We love seeing our dogs be happy. There's no question about
that. He loves
that.
Coming up here because he got the courtyard and birds to chase and plants to smell and things to do.
And y'all, let me just tell you, the birds have no concerns here. They laugh at him.
Oh, yeah. They just, he has a blast with them. He's all smiles.
Tomorrow's also the international day of the summer solstice, of course. So it's officially summer.
Official, well.
Mm-hmm.
It's felt like, you know, leading up, it's already felt like
too
for a
long.
Few weeks.
When I hear them start rattling off the heat indices for this next week or so, I'm thinking, it has to be August, right? Well, no. It's not August. It's June still.
I remember when 92 was 92. You know,
yeah.
Back when you were a kid,
yeah, sure.
There was nothing called a heat index. Now, no. I mean, if it's 92, it's probably 108. So,
well,
you know,
and
at least that's what
folks will tell you. Sure does feel hot out there, but they didn't measure it in mm-hmm. the ways that they do now.
I think it kind of messes with your mind a little too, because I'll
sure.
be doing this like you see on Sunday, heat index values as high as 100.
Mm-hmm.
Then you got these 25 mile an hour winds, and you're going, well, which one is?
Which
it?
Way are we going? It's hard.
It should not feel that hot with a 25 mile an hour wind.
But there it is. Oh, the lion pot at Mark's. These are some nice, beautiful photos this morning, y'all. Lovely photos. I've been answering questions this week about the fall garden, which, of course, is that misnomer that I still haven't figured out. You harvest it in the fall, but if you wait till fall to plant it, you're probably not going to get much. So we plant in the summer for the fall harvest. But it's so hot. How are we going to do it? You know? And the question is, how are you going to do it? The answer is, you're just going to do it. You know, just like we do everything else, we're just going to keep doing it. I think it's important for us to realize that gardening goes on. And no, not every season works out the way we wanted it to. On the other hand, some surprise us and are better. There are lots and lots of seed sales going on right now. Renee's Garden Seeds, of course, which I really like a lot. But a bunch of them are having their end of season sales, so that you can get ready for summer planting. And it's fine to hold them a few months, even all the way till next year if you need to. But get yourself some ideas. You know, think about what you want to plant, and go ahead and look ahead just a little bit. It's good. The middle of the afternoon. It's too hot to go outside and pull weeds, so you may as well be thinking about the fall garden. For years, everybody said, "Oh, nobody gardens." That was, you'd read this stuff. You know, nobody gardens in the wintertime. They read the seed catalogs. Well, no, we do that in the summer. Only this year, I'm allowing you to do it in June rather than in August. One of the things that I have enjoyed growing, and I encourage you to think about for your fall garden, is edamame. If you like beans, or if you like Japanese food and you've ever eaten the edamame at the restaurants, you know what I'm talking about. If not, let me tell you that it's a soybean. And it's a soybean that is, generally speaking, steamed, and you eat it by popping the beans out of the pod, and they're just delicious. They have an almost sweet taste. And, of course, then you can also cook them into lots of dishes and stuff. I So I saw a recipe for edamame fritters the other day, and I thought, probably not going to do that, but I bet it's good.
Yeah, I mean, that's when I knew what they were doing. Yeah.
Exactly.
I wouldn't try it because I'd probably have no idea what in the world I was going to be putting together.
Yeah, and it's a way to, because sometimes what happens, the way the story was going is that, and this is, I've seen this too, they'll the edamame will make all at once, and so there's a whole lot of them. And you may or may not want to deal with them, but then the plants start to turn yellow shortly after that because they finished their course for the season. So if you can do several different applications with those beans, you can go ahead and harvest them before they're going to turn into yellow, crispy things. Now, they're pretty. They'll make nice art, but they're going to be much better to eat if you get them while they're still green. No doubt about that. They do take about 80 days to harvest, so you'll plant them. I think the last time I planted them in central Mississippi, I grew them with planting beets in the middle of August. I planted the edamame, and then before Thanksgiving, both of those things were getting harvested. So today, just a lovely, lovely opportunity to grow something really fresh, really green, and really delicious. And of course, you know, soybeans are an excellent protein source. You know how, do you remember this? You probably don't, but yeah, somebody out here will. There used to be cereal, and then there was sugar-coated cereal. Okay, the cereals that we think of, Cheerios and Corn Flakes, Bran Flakes, that kind of stuff, those were the things that basically were separated out of the more granola-esque, but they weren't called granola then, they were called muesli and things. They were cereals that had lots of different oats, different grains in them, and then they also had nuts and different things, sometimes some fruit. But the American palate basically turned all those things into single element flakes. So when we do that, of course, we end up having a lot of things to think about. And I believe that when I looked at the shelf the other day and realized that the shelf of cereal goes, like, I don't even know, it's longer than the meat counter now. I mean, just an intense number of different cereals. The flakes are still there. But then there were the sugar-coated flakes. And then there were the things, basically, you know, rainbow Fruit Loops and that kind of stuff. Well, now we've gone more to the healthier dyes, the natural dyes to eat rather than others, and other elements like that, maybe less sugar, more honey, the different. But what is this with protein Cheerios, y'all? Somebody needs to tell me, wasn't there protein already in grains? I don't even know. But this whole marketing effort towards putting in more protein into everything, this goes right along until the next time somebody does a study and says, well, that wasn't such a good idea. You should actually eat whatever, you know, something else. I've always, for years, I've said that when they decide that, you know, the two or three things that I really like to eat and they're not considered terrible, and when those go off, I'm not going to have anything left to eat. But that's probably true. Let's see. How long and if you can keep seeds in the freezer? I don't freeze my seed. A lot of people do. And I would refer you to the individual information about the particular seed you are as to whether or not it can survive freezing. This is apart and separate from cold treatments for things like plum seeds. That's not what I'm talking about. But just storing seeds. I don't store them in the freezer, and I have real good success because I store them in paper, like in a paper envelope, which is then all the envelopes are then gathered into one plastic bag and they're put in a desk drawer. So there's a little bit of air that gets to them, but not very much, and they just hold themselves real well. I've not had, you know, maybe I'll end up after 3 or 4 years I'll have a 50% germination instead of a 90, but I don't find it necessary to freeze or to refrigerate. That may just be me. So, like I say, go to the individual information about that particular seed. For example, if you bought your seed from Eden Brothers or if you bought your seed from Park Seed, you would be able to find a lot of information about storing those particular seeds in their stuff. But I really do like that. I really appreciate the ability to make a choice. And some days in the garden, it feels like, well, you just have to do X or Y. And other times, you think, what am I looking at? go out there, I'm going to pull all this stuff off. There's been a big yellow blob of fungi that has appeared in flower pots. And it's I can tell you right off it's there because it's been so wet. The conditions are much better for the fungus than they are for, you know, for fungi, than they are for most other things. But the Leibniz Institute for the Analysis of Biodiversity Change, try putting that on a business card, has discovered a new Amazonian spider. This is so clever. When I tell you that the insects and the arachnids in this case can take over the world, we better be paying a lot of attention. This particular species mimics both the appearance and the behavior of a fungus. It looks like this parasitic fungus, but it also acts like it by living on the bottom of the leaf where the fungus would be. Now, this gives it two advantages. First of all, its predators try to show up to eat it, they can't see it because the adult human scientists that were looking for this ended up having to have a kid show it to them because looked so perfect, okay? Looked so much like this fungus that they see commonly. So it stays hidden from them, but potentially it also gives it the opportunity to be in one spot. And when the thing it wants to prey on walks by, it jumps out and gets it, and the thing doesn't even know it can move like that.
You got cat-like reflexes.
Seriously, it's just a brilliant thing. So I really, really love this. This is a Gibulella fungi that are commonly found in this particular thing. But this is a lot. I mean, this is right up there with crows using screwdrivers. You know what I mean? This is fancy stuff for this thing to be able to blend into its surroundings and then to escape its predators and then also be able to attack its prey more efficiently. That's pretty cool. I'm not going to read you the description of it because it's really ugly. It looks like a little blob of fungus in the description of it, and which parts are what of the spider are very uncomfortable to read about. But I want to get you to the Zootaxa ledger if you want to read about it some more, and I'm going to try Taxanawaskiawaska. That's the name of this spider. I like it. Y'all look him up if you want to see.
Sounds South American.
Well, you wouldn't be wrong. It's Amazonian.
Okay.
And the gang is, who knows where they're from? Switzerland or somewhere. So anyway, we'll be right back.
Sammy the Shovel here to tell you to call before you dig.
A lot of homeowners are working hard to create a loving home. Whether it's expanding that crowded deck, maybe a swimming pool, good times start with these additions. And that's why we respectfully ask you to first call 811 and have your utilities properly marked before you dig. It saves you from injury and expense. It's the law, and it's just the right thing to do. So call 811 before you dig. Remember us for your next project. Just call 811.
We are agriculture, the number one industry in Mississippi. We are 180,000 member families strong, a century of generations. We are grassroots Mississippi in all 82 counties. We are Unified, the largest general farm organization in Mississippi. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
At Key Constructors,
a little chank-a-chank for you this morning. If that doesn't wake you up.
I was hoping it would.
I don't know what will.
I'm telling you, going back through the text lines, always fun, you know, from the Friday.
Yeah.
Well, it was a tough crowd yesterday.
Yeah. Ooh. nobody seemed happy.
No, what was going on? I missed it.
Well, I wasn't re-listen. There. Yeah, I wasn't there either, so I can't tell you. But y'all are very articulate.
Yes.
Texters.
Yeah. Sports line gets fired up.
Yeah, that's,
well, that's
kind of
what happens
fun.
When there's no sports.
Well,
you know, everybody
got to talk about something.
Yeah,
that's
waiting
right.
For football.
Gotta, you know,
what's going on down in your neck of the woods as far as rain? It just started pouring down rain here again.
Yeah.
In central Mississippi, are you getting, you know, just deluge like we are here, or is it a little sporadic?
Right where I am, which is actually outside of New Orleans, mm-hmm. toward the west, toward the river. But anyway, the point is, we had two tornadoes that came across the river, and we were right in between them the other morning. But since then, we had a whole lot of rain that day. But we've been on the bottom of it.
Yeah.
We've been our particular area, neighborhood here. But there was actually more flooding in this part, in Kenner and at Metairie and those places, than there was in the city of New Orleans, because of those tornadoes that came across. So it was pretty exciting. We had a tropical disturbance, but we also had y'all's weather.
Right. Well,
the two things, you know.
Doing the weather, I noticed y'all had a lot in the, especially with the tropical depression that had come through. Good old Arthur.
Hello, Arthur.
Yeah, Arthur. But as far as the rain and water, what we're dealing with now in your garden, if you can steer it away, is that helpful, or is it okay to let it just get soaked?
This is really the time when you have to make some of those decisions that you may not be able to carry out right now. For example, if you see that all the water that falls in your property is sitting in one place, this isn't the time to go try to move the water, but you do need to understand that it's there. Now, obviously, if you could make a little ditch to get it away from if it's near the house, or if it's impinging on an important tree or something like that, and it's just standing there, you can do a little bit of ditching. But most of that work really needs to be done when things are drier, just because it destroys the soil so much to dig it up when it's wet. And some of the relocating of water involves digging up the soil. So it just is one of those things. But taking pictures now and understanding what you want to do, I know some of y'all don't care about this, but looking at the neighbor's property to decide whether or not you're going to mess them up would probably be a good idea, you know, since we all have to live here. But there's not that many ways you can do anything right now. Now, if you determine that, I can't say this is true, but I know that a few years ago somebody told me that their property in Madison County got 2 inches more rain every year for 5 years than it had previously done, and that's when he planted a bog garden. Mm-hmm. Okay, you know, so plants that could tolerate those conditions. And it's beautiful, but it also helps to absorb the water and helps to keep it there rather than, again, sending it out into where it has to be a flash flood someplace. So we have a big water issue. I have two pitchers outside that function as my rain gauges, and they're both full right now. They're 2 gallon pitchers, so it's been raining quite a bit. Haven't had to water much.
Yeah, that's been the only benefit. I was doing a good bit of watering. How will this affect the last, you know, bloom of these tomatoes that I have, or anyone else that has, you know, the ones that are a little small that are trying to do their thing? They look a little bit, to me, they look a little light on the green color. Is there something?
Probably are.
Is it waterlogged, or is
yeah,
that?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Is that what
the other piece of it is that in terms of if your tomatoes are flowering, for example, we'll go back to the beginning, if they're flowering and if the temperatures at night are cool enough for them to be able to set, which they still are I believe in Senatobia. I was looking at some temperatures this week, and I think that's where I saw that. But otherwise, if temperatures are 70, 75, 80 degrees at night, the tomatoes are not going to set very well. If you have ones with heat in the name, like heat wave, you know, things like that, they have a little bit better chance. But the ones that you're most likely to have, the better boys and such, you know, common varieties as that, even some of the heirlooms, the Brandywine and whatnot that we like so much, just can't set fruit when the nighttime temperatures are over 70 degrees. So you're basically just taking care of the plants, and that's why people will look around and say, well, my plants are in terrible shape. I'm going ahead and take them down because I'm not going to keep messing with them. It's going to keep raining, and I'm going to replant again in a month anyway. So
I basically should just get ready for replanting and not worry about having a tomato plant that's not going to really do anything ones.
Exactly. If you have beautiful plants, I always say cut them back by half and let them go. Let them continue. you know, because that's about how much they can get rid of and still go on and bear again in the fall.
Okay.
But if you need to replace them, next month will be the time to do that. So if you feel like you're going to have to, why take care of them for a month if you're going to yank them out anyway?
Sure.
So.
I like the green. It's pretty.
It's lovely. Yeah. It is lovely.
And as far as though, after these last tomatoes ripen up, then cut it in half if I want to take care of them for the next month. Otherwise, mm-hmm. just wait and buy mm-hmm. other plants as we get closer to the fall planting, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Because they're not going to do you any good.
Yeah.
The other thing that happens sometimes is that people will cut the spring tomato plants back, and then the next, I mean like a minute later, which is actually not true, 2 or 3 days later, but it feels like a minute, the whole thing's covered up in stink bugs because you've got that new growth coming up and they just love that, or even aphids sometimes, but it's usually stink bugs at this point in the year. So that's another reason why people pull them out and just replant. If they're not doing a whole lot of good for you, they don't need to take up room.
As far as the existing soil that I had in there, if I choose to replant, do I need to pull all of the goods out of it that were
yep.
rooted and then shake it out real good? And
you
then
need to replace that.
Replace yeah. all the good stuff. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You
can use it for something else somewhere
sure.
else.
Okay.
So, Rebecca. Hey, Rebecca from Adamsville, Tennessee. She and I have been talking about this plant in email. And what she found out is that now the bottom of the hanging basket is... the water's just gushing out the bottom. So does that mean it's time to repot it? Yes, it really does. And she really does have a green thumb, so I know she can do this. But some of the leaves probably are turning brown because it's, first of all, it's pot bound, so they're not all getting what they need. But second of all, it may actually be drying out too much because the water's gushing out the bottom. So I would repot it and take the ribbon off. It's pretty ribbon, but I'd still take the ribbon off. I'm not able to reply online. My screen's just not doing it today. I'm not really sure what I need to adjust. But if you would just tell Ron that that's a really funny joke, I'll appreciate it, Lance.
I'll do so, yes.
Do that for us. Oh, a flathead worm.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh. This is in Madison. He put the... Oh, dear. This sounds like the plot of a horror movie.
Well, it's y'all, made out to be.
Y'all want me to read this to you? Oh. My husband found a flathead worm on the patio, so he researched it, and now we're all freaked out. That's a summary. That was my summary, not his. He put it down the disposal, and now he's worried that they will regenerate in the pipes. That I can't tell you about. I have no idea about their survivability, but I grant you it's kind of gruesome. And she hopes that we're all on high ground. I hope y'all are on high ground. Truly, this has been a tough go. The flathead worm problem is a problem. But I haven't read anything that says what the solution is. So I'm going, now we've had it 3 weeks in a row, I'll do some more research and see what we can find out about it. About what to do. We know what it is. We know how they're here. We know that warming temperatures have encouraged them to live in places they didn't used to live and also to come out of the ground more often. So I'll see what I can figure out. Tune in next week and we'll try and do
Hope you're not abducted between now and then.
Somebody suggests that you dump salt or vinegar down the drain. I don't think that's a bad idea anyway. It helps keep the drain. Good morning, Paula. Let's see. We're going to have to look over Dave's pictures. Just gorgeous. You just want to take a deep breath and go, ah. In the next hour, these will be up on supertalk.tv. They're beautiful. It's got dahlias and he's got daylilies, I think. Yeah, that's an impatien. Pretty orange impatien. Lovely. What we call... cornflowers or bachelor buttons.
Oh, y'all have these up just a minute. I just got to move them over.
And some coneflowers and then a lovely Vitex. Just as Dave's been busy. That's wonderful.
What colors, too. How beautiful.
Mm-hmm. Really beautiful. Just lovely. Just lovely. And that's really what it's all about, isn't it? We want stuff that we like to look at it. The colors are pretty. And there's not a human being on this earth, and probably several cats, that that don't appreciate this. Have you ever noticed how when you have an animal and they go in the garden, now they may tear up something, but most of the older ones will actually just go find a spot and sit under a plant, you know, sit on a branch, just hang out. Well, that's the same joy that I get, I believe they get. And that's really fun.
Yeah, Butterscotch is, he loves to just kind of get underneath the plants, and then he'll come out and slick his whiskers back by rubbing against one of the branches, and it's like a religion to him.
Well, and they get into their routines in the same way that we do. That's for sure.
I love watching him get to where he goes one after another, just kind of he'll rotate left and right and left and right, and it doesn't really matter what. It could be the rose bush with a 2-inch prong sticking off. He doesn't bother him one bit. He loves it.
Nope.
He loves just the plants.
Appreciating everything. Yeah.
The other one, he likes to get on top of everything, sunshine. But Butterscotch loves to get underneath them, and he just chills and guard cats everything. So I'm like, I love watching them enjoy the plants.
It's a treat. It's a treat. Staying on the fungi train today. Do you all remember this? This is, and I'm trying to think of the guy's name who wrote the book after we had talked about it, and then I got this book from this guy. But anyway, the fact that all the roots of trees, like for example in the aspen groves in Colorado, those roots are all connected by the same fungi that forms the basis. We understand that in the soil food web, of course, what we're looking at is the ability for the roots to function better because they're an environment that gives them what they need, and they in turn can return to that environment what it needs to continue to stay healthy. And that sort of sustainable symbiotic relationship is the soil food web. It doesn't happen until we plant plants in the soil, but when it does, it really makes a big difference. Well, what we're understanding now, the society, I love this, Society for the Protection of Underground Networks. I know it sounds like something on the dark web. It's not. This is the vast hidden fungal superhighway. This thing goes all the way around the world, and they've actually been able to map and to name and to tell us what a lot of these things are. What they did was the reason that we care about this, of course, is because the planet's climate needs to help moving carbon into the soil, and this is what this particular happening does. What we understand that this process has always been going on, and it's what makes the world go round, you know, photosynthesis and what it does for us and for the plants. But it's also true that there has to be something else going on to keep it promoted, in the same way that the soil food web, the roots promote the growth promotes the roots, you know, all of this at the same time. What we're looking at now, the support of plant life in this particular part, is being published in Science, so that's where you can look for it. But I want you to know about arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi. We talk about mycorrhiza all the time, but these that form partnerships with most of the plants on the earth. And this is why it's so important for us to take care of the earth. When we don't, we get things like the Dust Bowl. When we don't, we get droughts that are unrelenting. When we don't, we have floods that can't be controlled, okay, because we're not taking care of stuff. And it's really important. The map is beautiful. I'm sure we'll have it everywhere. Maybe we'll put it on a T-shirt. But the interactive opportunity to look at this in the computer model really does make obvious what we have seen in so many settings, that obviously it's connected around the world. And that's just brilliant. I love that. I think they're smart. I'm glad they did it. This time of year, seeing so much fun seeing all the gardeners enjoying the fruits of their labor. Yeah, there's disappointments. That's true. Nathan says his bell peppers are doing so well that it means a lot to him. It's the small things. That's true. I always said I was going to grow bell peppers because I like to stuff them, but I just ended up stuffing hot peppers because I still can't grow bell peppers worth a darn. Oh, my goodness. We'll talk about a bunch of other stuff. This is some interesting flathead worm conversation here in the text line. We'll get to that. So glad you could get to us. This is the Garden Mama Show. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Brad Phillips from Yazoo City, Mississippi. I'm proud to be Mississippi's Catfish Farmer of the Year. Catfish farming takes a lot of hard work, but it's worth it to provide your family the best, freshest, healthiest fish available. When you buy U.S. catfish, you get that perfectly mild flavor every time, and you're supporting local jobs. Always look for the U.S. farm-raised catfish seal. Find recipes and restaurants at uscatfish.com.
Pine Grove Behavioral Health and Addiction Services, located in Hattiesburg, is one of the nation's most comprehensive treatment campuses. Pine Grove provides the highest quality mental health care and addiction treatment for children, adolescents, and adults. Pine Grove offers many levels of care, including inpatient and outpatient treatment for children and adolescents. If you have any questions, please call 1-888-574-HOPE and visit pinegrovetreatment.com.
I'm Rex Beck.
I don't know. Lance, I've always considered you to be kind of one of a kind, you know. There's not another quite like you. But I don't know how to tell you this, but you're one of... Well, more than 50 million.
Okay.
Yeah, Lances? Dog dads.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, I don't think there are that many Lances, but there's that many dog dads.
Well, that's not. There's only 50 million.
That's what they think.
Be more than that. But.
Well, it's about 50% of men own a dog.
Okay.
And then there's, that goes, if we look at 130 million men in the country.
In the country, I got
that's
you.
How we end up. Oh, yeah,
perfect.
No, we're not.
I thought we were talking over 8 billion people. I'm like,
we haven't gone German yet, and, you know, heaven knows.
Yeah.
But the dogs, I just think this is so funny. Dog-owning households have an average of 1.6 dogs. So you have somebody. You have somebody else's part of a dog.
How does that work? Is it like
I don't know. I'm curious about that.
Hey, one quick question is:
sure.
How do you grow a blooming onion? They're so delicious. is there a secret to this?
Excuse me.
But no, seriously, with onions,
well, you have to grow the whole onion
first. Yeah, yeah.
And that's not easy.
No. I had one yesterday, and I just forget how awesome they are, and it makes me want to grow onions.
Mm-hmm,
you know, so it's always fun to revisit
today
an old treat.
Yeah, today is not the day to begin growing onions.
How do we do this?
If I want to start from scratch. Yeah, we'll start seeding, but we'll be seeding several months from now.
Okay.
I'll keep you up to date. I'll put it on your calendar.
I want to circle a date on when I know I can make my own blooming onion with my own two hands.
I want to see the video. That's all I can tell you. You know, like you always think about, I realize that there are people with test kitchens and people that try out recipes, and it's an entire industry that I'm not very much aware of. But I still want to know who figured out that they could not only do that, you know, make an onion that had all the fried parts coming up like that, but that they could make it for restaurants and it would actually survive to the table.
Yeah.
I find that to be an amazing craft. It's not easy. Fried food especially is so hard to do, but... Those things are everywhere. That's just incredible. Well, did you have a vanilla milkshake with it?
No, I did not. I had a nice old can of Foster's.
Oh, gosh.
Well,
today is indeed sturdy eggnog day.
Ooh.
That's what a vanilla milkshake actually is.
I got you.
Have you ever noticed how our culture, they always talk about everything about in terms of culture, but our culture has taken a lot of those things and cleaned them up for medicine, you know what I mean? It's like I go back to my dad was a very early 20th century man, and he always felt like after they invented aspirin that not only would it cure everything, but if two was good, six was better. You know, none of that is true. It doesn't cure everything, but it was sure a lot better than anything they had going on before that to take care of a headache or something, you know, muscle aches and that sort of stuff. So there was a certain amount of, it was an alcoholic adult tonic intended to settle your stomach. And it was known as sturdy eggnog with whiskey, eggs, and cream. And somebody or other in the late 1800s said, you know, if we just take all that stuff out of it, we can sell it as a vanilla milkshake. And that's what they did.
Boom.
So That's and I do think, because it has something to do with putting ice cream into a soda fountain drink, was how they got there, you know. And I think there may have even been malt involved in the soda fountain drink. I don't know about those things. I didn't ever do that. But the whole notion is that it got mixed up somewhere, and that's what they decided to call it. But they took out the egg and the whiskey. Oh, well.
The whiskey sounds real nice on a day like today.
There's a lot to be said for it. A lot to be said for it. But I do think that part of it was because the soda fountains were trying to appeal to a younger crowd, so they didn't put alcohol in everything.
I understand. Well, and the soda fountains were so ornate and diverse and mm-hmm. so multi-layered back in the day. I had an opportunity to go into a functioning one, you know, probably 30 years ago, and I was kind of blown away that, you know, they had been able to keep it as as tight and nice as obviously it was in the heyday of the soda fountain. But, you know, you can... Man, you had to be a bartender back in those days, basically.
It was very complicated.
Yeah, very complicated. Yeah. You make a Coca-Cola, basically.
Yes, exactly. There were none in the cooler. It wasn't that kind of deal. You would almost... there's a lot to be said for the alchemy of being a soda jerk, is what they were called. But they were called a jerk because the handles on there, you jerked them to pull down to let in whatever you were putting into the drink. And that's why they were called soda jerks. But that is one of those things that you had to know a whole lot of stuff. If you put the green stuff in the blue thing, it's not going to be the same. And, of course, now we all would love to be able to rate milkshakes, but most people do that at home. And vanilla has fallen from favor, of course. Somebody put chocolate in it, and everybody bought it.
Yeah, I used to love it when people would come in and order like 6 chocolate martinis. You'd be like, oh my God, no. So labor-intensive.
I was going to say, that's a busy bar order.
Man, yeah, you get those. You get one, you're going to get 6, you know?
No, I don't. But okay.
I mean, that's the way that people would order. They would say, when you would see.
No,
some,
I understand.
You know, yeah. When there'd be a white Russian ordered, and then there would be 10.
You
know,
immediately.
Yeah, it's like, oh, I forgot how awesome those looked.
Yeah, this is so delicious.
Everybody wants them.
Yeah, that's true. I can remember being a bartender, and the later the night went, the fewer bar back there was, and the more just bar.
Yeah.
People getting serious about their alcohol consumption. Oh, my goodness. How cool is this? Yeah, there's so many things going on today. I just love this. I really appreciate that one of the folks in Bay Springs, this is from Nathan, that he uses Milorganite all the time and always has a beautiful garden. Milorganite is a wonderful source of organic matter. For those of you who don't know, I know when I first was introduced to Milorganite, I thought by now everybody would be doing this because it makes so much sense. But it is the sludge from the system the sludge from the sewer system, which has then been, Milwaukee was where it began, but it's several places now. They dry it out, they beef it up, they make sure that it's non-toxic, and it is a magnificent organic matter. So that's, Andrea says her favorite is vanilla malt. A lot of people like malt better than milkshake, that's for sure.
I love just vanilla. I mean, the flavor of vanilla, I know it sounds boring, but, like, good vanilla is delicious.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. That's why people spend so much money to grow vanilla orchids and, you know, have them at the bar where you can harvest the vanilla pod and actually make it into something. I mean, it's wonderful. I do not like a milky whiskey. This is from our dear friend Paula. Well, I got to disagree with you because coffee and creamer and... A little Irish coffee doesn't hurt my feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Put a little milk in that. And here we are again talking about alcohol at 8 o'clock in the morning.
Take the nip out the air.
9 o'clock in the morning. Oh, my goodness. This is one of the things that is going on right now. There are a lot of people, I said that the seeds are all on sale everywhere, and that's true. But there's also all of the reviews. If you all are not jumping into the world, the garden world, I like YouTube, but I think there's the same sort of stuff in every, certainly there is an Instagram. You run into these people that they literally will tell you what they think about everything. And that in turn, you know, this variety of tomatoes or that variety of squash or this recipe using, you know, artichokes or something. I mean, there's so many things and people immediately argue with them. So you get to read several points of view. I tried that and it didn't work. I tried that. It was great. You know, I mean, you can go back and forth with all that and really take a few things. Plus, it's fun. It's kind of like just leaning over the fence and saying, what y'all doing? You know, and that there's a lot of gardening in that. Coming up in the next hour, we're going to talk to you a little bit about tiny microbes and not so tiny, not very tiny, but millipedes anyway. One thing and another. Stay where you are, please. We'll be right back.
Ever imagine one company could transform how you live and work? With CSpire, you're connected with advanced technology that enhances everything you do. How you order your morning coffee.
Order my usual.
How you secure your company's data. Even how you implement AI to increase productivity.
And next quarter is looking even better.
Giving you the confidence and control to accelerate business growth. There's more to see. CSpire, customer inspired.
Nowadays, customers are searching online for the services they need.
Are they looking at your business?
Having a mobile-friendly website can really help you win new customers. Let SuperTalk Mississippi Media create a great-looking and very affordable website for your business. Plus, studies suggest that a well-written radio ad can lead to a 20% lift in traffic to your website. Just call SuperTalk Mississippi Media today at 601-991-2305 or go to stmmdigital.com.
Garden
out of them?
No. I've grown elderberry. I've grown elderberry and turned the harvest over to people, but right. I've never done that. It's probably one of those things I should have because, you know, we could all be rich by now.
Yeah, yeah, just the bottle, man.
Just those things that are so popular. And I'm not going to give you all the details of this particular prescription for dealing with the hammerhead worms, but the point that yes, they can in fact regenerate from their parts. That's something we generally accept about worms, right? In this particular case, the idea is to take that old Cool Whip container and get the worm into it, and then you're going to deal with it in there with one form or another until you've killed it. Several choices: table salt, hand sanitizer. I'm sure that somebody somewhere would suggest Coca-Cola because they say that kills everything. I'm not saying it. Somebody else would. Put the container in a freezer, put soapy water in it, but the point is when the thing dies, you dispose of the container and all. This is what we do with a lot of things that we don't want in our yard anymore. I've done in a couple of grasshoppers in a very similar fashion, just catch them in a plastic bag and leave them inside of it because they can't breathe after a while. Sounds awful, but trust me, they were tearing up my rose and I wasn't going to have that. So I had to take action. And that's really what we're talking about, is when you have to do something about it. And yes, one will lead to more. So if you can get rid of that first one that appears, as our texter did earlier today, it makes a lot of sense. Meanwhile, there are things that I've wondered about ever since I can remember. Well, I wondered why the little red hen was so nice to all those people that weren't nice to her before, and then she was nice to them. Okay, I get why you would do that. You're still trying to build your community. But I never have been able to understand how come a crab can grow another arm and I can't. You know, how come humans can't regenerate? If we're all made out of the same cells, what's the deal here? And I did not go to school for this, so I'm relying on Texas A&M to let us know that, in fact, there might be a mechanism that could go one way or could go the other way. And in humans, it goes one way. And in creatures that can regenerate, it goes the other way. And it has to do with the healing of the wound. Now, we understand that wounds, generally speaking, scab over, and that's a positive thing. It keeps their ability to heal going, keeps it all together. But what they have discovered is that the body responds in humans with fibrosis, and that of course is the cells close quickly over the wound and form that scar tissue there. That prevents infection, keeps it from getting hurt more, but the body can't rebuild what was there. What they found out is that other animals have this, that they have the same thing, like salamanders, for example. The similar cells gather, but they gather into what's called a blastoma. You know, we've studied and heard about how cells, the reason that all our cells are the same is because of their ability to adapt and to create what needs to be created. And in this case, that's what they did. And the blastoma serves as a foundation for new tissue growth. So what they're saying is, and this is a direct quote, it's as if these cells can move in two different directions. Well, you think? That's unquote. He didn't say the well you think part. But I'm eager. I want this to turn into a thing. I want this to be real, because I think human beings should be able to regenerate. And quite frankly, the more we can approach it, the more we can study it. Texas A&M's a good place to do that.
You think with all the things that we fund, you know, with research and all that, this might have been one of the first ones you wanted to focus on,
mm-hmm.
rather than, you know, let's wait to 2026 to really, you know, get deep and dirty on this.
Well, paper. And I think that people have worked on it, but it takes years to find something like this, to find how those cells, you know, we didn't know what stem cells did for a long time.
Well, there were people some were restrictions on that.
Well, know. people were studying it, mm-hmm. but you can't find out what till you can find out.
All I'm saying is, if we're going to be building colonies on Mars, we probably ought to know how to regenerate a hand here.
I cannot disagree. I cannot disagree with you. There's no doubt that we need to know how to do this. And plus, it's just, I mean, if we're the superior of the creatures, we need to have all those things at our disposal, you know, our ability to do all of that important stuff. There's a... I'm looking at the begonia flowers. There was a conversation that I was listening to this week about whether to leave the flower on the begonia and let those seed pods form, because as we know, that's, you know, that one's not going to bloom again. If you cut it back before the seed pods form, that branch of the begonia is, generally speaking, pretty well capable of blooming again. But I love the way the seed pods look so much. So one of the pictures that you will see on supertalk.tv today is a begonia of mine that has the seed pods in full glory, but another one where the flowers are there. So I wanted you to see that I do know the difference, but also that I appreciate both. I think anytime I see those, the shell earrings that are those tiny capiz shells, that kind of stuff, it always makes me think of the begonias, because they fall and hang that same way. They make a better noise. The begonias are pretty quiet. But it's an interesting thing to work on. I have been, last call, if you haven't planted your pumpkins yet for the fall, they'll be ready for Thanksgiving, but not Halloween. So get them in the ground now. Get busy. Most of those things take somewhere from 85 to 100 days to make a pumpkin. So give yourself that opportunity.
I saw the coolest thing the other day. Somebody was playing around with making an outdoor sink, and they had just created a basic box and poured their concrete in it, and then took a big ripe pumpkin that they had grown and jammed it down into that concrete to make the bowl part, mm-hmm. the ornate nature that came out from that with the lines and the...
I love that.
Oh, it was really cool. And then he just took a drill, you know, the right size to drill out the bottom so you could put right. in your hardware. But I found that. I was like, wow, what a cool handyman / gardening crossover. But it was really cool. And I thought, I'd never seen anything like that as far as, you know, a sink that was actually made out of the base mm-hmm. imprint of mm-hmm. a big pumpkin. It was really neat.
You'll see sometimes trays that are made, my friend, the great artist Daniel Johnson, made for a long time, plates that are made, for example, out of elephant ear leaves. And
yeah,
they're actually pressed. Yeah. They're actually pressed. And it's a beautiful, talk about organic art. I mean, you know, if you take a loofah sponge and cut it, you end up with you're looking at the end of it, you're looking at nice little round spaces where the mm-hmm. the seeds have formed. That's a really cool painting tool. You can blob it into some paint and literally you can make really discreet designs, or you can literally cover the whole thing up or fill in somebody's hair. I mean, it's a great tool, and it's also a really fun pattern. It's just different. It's one of those things. Not everybody would think to do it, but I like it, you know. How many jugglers do you suppose there are that can juggle five balls? Today is National Jugglers Day. Should tip your cap if you see one. There's probably a maximum of 5,000 people in the entire world that can juggle five objects. There are zillions of people who can juggle three, and that's still quite impressive. But the people who go even higher, I mean, my goodness, they're the ones that, you know, get the contract for the hotel performance. If there's probably maybe 100 people who can juggle nine balls at a time in this world. It's a really rare skill. If you're looking for something to develop that is very much admired but very difficult to do for most people, see if you have a hand for this. See if you have the ability to juggle, because very few people can. There are juggling clubs. There are really some interesting ways of determining how people, after you juggle three, how many chances you have to go any further. But not everybody can go even any further than that. Let's see. Well, yeah, that's true. Anthony Gatto, even I've heard of him. He was considered the greatest technical juggler of all time. Multiple world records, running seven clubs for over 4 minutes. Mm. Can you imagine how hard that is to do? I've seen some videos of this guy. But others have surpassed him in individual pieces of it. But he remains what they call the great one. You know?
Got one for you from Paul in Columbia. He didn't want to be on air. He just kind of wanted to sit back and listen, because it's a couple of things going on here. He had had some great blueberry plants at his dad's. He took some clippings of that and went to the neighbors and grew some amazing blueberry bushes there. They produced a ton of blueberries, he said. Then he took some of the shoots from that underneath the plants, mm-hmm. and brought them over to his house. He's got five bushes. He's done everything possible, fertilized, cut them back, but he can't get blueberries off of this splice or off of this mm-hmm. graft that he took over from the second. So it started at the dad's. He took mm-hmm. some clippings, mm-hmm. grew some at the next door neighbors, did very well, produced a ton, took clippings out of the ground from that, put them at his house. He's got five bushes, and none of them will produce anything, although the other bushes they came from did. Mm-hmm. And he was curious, what can he do?
I wonder how long it's been since he did this.
Not sure.
It takes 3 or 4 years for that seedling, or okay. that cutting blueberry to make some fruit. And I also would be curious to find out what he's fertilizing with, because blueberries are in need of acid soil. So, for example, the fertilizer that you would use on plums and peaches wouldn't necessarily give blueberries what they need. It's more in the group with camellias and azaleas and the acid lovers. And so it also depends on your soil, might be greatly different from there. If your soil doesn't have a lot of organic matter in it, you're going to have to apply it. But I think if you're still 3 or 4 years from doing this, you shouldn't have any problems. You'll see flowers, it certainly, and maybe some fruit by next year. But my main thought is to look at what kind of fertilizer you're using and make sure you're using something that enhances the acid effect of the soil and doesn't mess with it, because that's real important for blueberries. Sometimes they don't need anything except a little bit of a jolt in the acid direction. A lot of things like that, you know, if we start right now, for example, if you cut back your tomatoes, Lance, and cut them in half, and you said, I'm going to fertilize them, what should I use? Well, I would tell you, you need to use some kind of vegetable garden food, but you do need all things. You need nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, as well as the minor elements, to get it growing. But if you ask me the same question next month when they've already begun to bloom, I would tell you, no, you not only don't need to give them any nitrogen, you probably don't want to, because that's going to create more leaf growth. And if it gets into a fight with itself on the plant, those flowers can all fall off. And that's a sad day.
Right. You know? Right. So it is it's case sensitive. It timing and what is needed now versus maybe what be needed later. Yes. I've learned a lot from listening, and it still gets a little confusing.
It is confusing.
What necessarily needs to go. But I know that too much nitrogen as they're trying to fruit is going to create a competition, mm-hmm. right? And you don't want that.
In general, nitrogen is shoots. In other words, it's green leafy growth. All right. Phosphorus and potassium are fruits and roots. So if you think shoots, fruits, and roots, you know what you're trying to feed. You're not trying to feed the shoots. You got plenty of that, so back up on the nitrogen. But give yourself the opportunity to give the plant some other nutrients if it needs it. So that's really the best thing. I don't know how to say this without sounding. I mean, there's people that'll tell you that you got to feed your plants every week of their life. Okay, outside. There are other people that'll say, "Nah, every couple of years is plenty," and that's why horticulture is as much an art as it is a science. Because the soil's composition might in fact support those plants for a couple of years. On the other hand, it might not, you know, and so there's just so many different factors. It's not a strict art. It's a lot of science, but it's got a lot of science in it that also has to be kind of artfully applied. So that's why we talk about the different kinds of fertilizer, and that's why you go and see so many different products when you get into the garden center. There's just so many of them, so many different things to consider. Last week I said some things that were not that complimentary. Not so complimentary about log rolling, and I have something to say about that. Turns out that was a practical thing. It was the only way they could dislodge the trees that were coming down the river, the only ones that had stuck in the sides or something. They had to get out there and physically use their feet to get them unattached, and that's why it became a competition. Turns out there's a whole lot about that in surfing too, as well as the composition of the boards going from wood to, I don't know, what are they now? Aluminum and metal parts, styrofoam. Anyway, who's on the phone?
Well, we have Donnie from Tylertown, and he has a bunch of wild persimmons in a field, and he said they just won't grow persimmons, and he had some questions for you on that. Okay. Donnie, you're on.
Hey, Donnie.
Hello.
Good morning.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I've been fooling with them, you know, for years. They all volunteer from an original old mother tree at the corner of the field. This field is about approximately 3 to 5 acres big, mm-hmm. and it has at least 75 voluntary persimmon trees in it. And out of all those, only one will make persimmon. And I realize that you have a male and a female, but do I have 3 acres of male trees or female trees?
That's a high concentration of trees. How old are they?
Well, they spread out. You know, they're not bunched up. You know,
I understand
they
spread
out pretty good.
You've been doing this like 3 years, 10 years? How long?
Some of these trees have been there 10 years. Yes.
Okay.
Some of them are probably 30 feet tall. You know, 25-30 feet tall. And it's been bunched out to be a beautiful tree. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, the one that makes persimmon is only about 8 feet tall.
Well, it's not too surprising, actually, because they do. Here's the deal. Persimmons are like a lot of our native fruits. They will make a few persimmons, but they make a whole lot more if they're pollinated properly, that is to say by a different variety. And because these all came from the same mother tree, I would suggest that you might want to propagate the one that is making, or propagate the one next to it that you feel like is pollinating it, because generally they'll bear, and one tree out of the pair will make a lot of fruit, and the other out of the pair will only make a few. So since you're only getting fruit from one tree, I think you either need to add some other persimmons in there, not some more from your same source, but some that you would get, you might get them from the conservation service in the wintertime. You might be able to buy them at nurseries. But if you introduce a few more native persimmons that are just from a different strain of that family, I think you'll get better pollination. Okay?
Okay.
All
yeah,
right.
Well, I appreciate that.
All righty.
I know several different things about maybe fertilizing. And
yeah, fertilizer could help. It could help. Let me step away from here, and I'll talk some more about this when we get back, okay? Thanks for calling me. Stick around.
Right back here with me. Thank God for good direction. Turn up grains.
Thinking about that big home project? In Mississippi, the law requires a licensed contractor for residential projects, including new home construction over $50,000, home remodeling or improvements, including roofing over $10,000. All subcontractors performing residential, electrical, plumbing, or HVAC work on new home construction projects over $50,000 or home improvement projects over $10,000. Don't risk your investment. Visit msboc.us to verify a contractor's license today. A message from the Mississippi State Board of Contractors.
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe.
We've sent that Rip Van Winkle.
To be under the sea in an octopus's garden in the shade. He'd let us in, knows where we've been in his octopus's garden in the shade.
Now, here's one of those connectivities that I didn't ever know about until recently. If I say Danger Will Robinson, I hope that the robot, but also Bill Mumy, comes to your mind. And I follow him on social media because he plays music and he has good stories to tell. But he also played music with Ringo Starr, and I had no idea. There's so many things I don't know, but it's delightful. I believe Ringo Starr has played music with everybody on the West Coast of America at one time or another. Certainly all of his all-star bands have been interesting, but they're very seldom the same people because not everybody wants to go do all that, you know. So it's very cool. A little bit more on the pollination and the issues with trying to get persimmons to bear. There's the time factor, and the trees are old enough, they're big enough, and they are, in fact, apparently blooming, but they're not pollinating. So in addition to suggesting some be planted there from another strain, like, for example, a different, not all from the same mother tree, okay? Because we know that persimmons are capable of making fruit, self-pollinating, but they do better with another one, and they'll both make more if they have the pollination properly. So either one of those two things is true. The other thing that's true is that the fertilizer that you're using may or may not be what they're actually looking for. And in that case, I don't know what you use. I don't know if you fed them anything, but I'd do a soil test this summer and just let the numbers guide you, because you may have been putting on 13, 13, 13, which is entirely too much nitrogen at this point in those trees' lives. Or you may have been using something entirely different. Now, there's no telling, but the point is, this is the job for a soil test before you start applying fertilizer to decide whether or not you need it and what you need, okay?
Got a question for you.
Yes, sir.
Dave was calling from Forest, Mississippi, and he was curious if tomatoes are wilting because of all this rain. Is that,
yeah,
that's what's happening?
Yeah.
No way to stop that other than get them out of the rain, maybe?
I think there's a lot of what happens when the soil gets waterlogged. This is so contrary to common sense, but it's in fact true. The roots can no longer take water up when there's as much water in the soil as there is in the root. And that's called saturation, and everything just stops. And if it doesn't let up, the roots not only can't help the top of the plant, but they'll die themselves at a certain point in that process. So if they're wilting, it's another case where I'm going to tell you, we're almost, even in forest, our nights are too warm to set fruit now. So if the plants are not in good condition, you may not want to keep caring for them for another month before you can plant some more. So you can think about taking them out. It may be that if you prune them, cut back by about half, they might be able to perk up a little bit, but there's been a lot of water, and there's still going to be more. So I have a feeling that they've just been overwhelmed. We're starting to see blight as well, because that's another thing that is, it's always there, but when it washes up from the soil in a wet situation, it's much worse. So we're seeing a lot of that. Ron in Ocean Springs. Yes, I have read some of that too. Carnivorous snails is one of those things you just don't want to even think
what?
Of.
A carnivorous snail? Tell anyway. Me, these are the aliens.
Well, see, that's what I mean. You don't. We want it to be an oxymoron. You don't want it to actually be a thing. But anyway, Randy and Starfall's not having good luck starting muscadines from seeds. Pooh, me either.
Well, in the first way I read it, when I walked in and sat down, it said, to me, not having good luck starting mustaches. And I'm sitting there going, man, you and me both. But then I reread it, and it's muscadines.
Muscadines are not impossible to start from seed, but it's very slow. And generally speaking, there's an argument. Which what we're trying to do when we start seeds is we're trying to replicate where those seeds would have sprouted in their own world. Okay, so there are people who will tell you to only let them fall next to your plants and then dig them up from the mother muscadine. That can work. There's other people that will tell you to take some of that soil and put it into the flat or container where you're trying to start the seeds. There are people who I've read these are all from scholarly sources. I studied the muscadines for a good chunk of time back around the introduction of the Eudora variety. And the issue is always, should they be wet? Should they be dry? Should we start them right away? Should we give them a rest period? And everybody has a different story to tell. But they all will tell you, and I'm telling you too, that if you want that particular muscadine that you're looking at, that you got the berry from that plant, you need to propagate it vegetatively, that is to say from a cutting or from a root of that plant, in order to get that same one, because the seeds are not necessarily going to be the same as the plant that you got the fruit from, and so you may be disappointed in it. I'm going to suggest that if I wanted to start muscadines, because they take 7 or 8 years from that seed, if you could get them started, and 4 or 5 years from transplant of a young muscadine into the garden, I would go ahead, even though you're continuing to try to raise some from seed, I'd go ahead and buy a couple just to be sure you have all that you want, and some of the newer varieties, which I think are easier to grow. I hope that helps. Do love them, though. There used to be some people that grew hops in Starkville. I have to wonder if they're still there. Anyway, this is very confusing. We have a tree that we got from the forestry people. Its leaves look like peaches. It blooms white, so that wouldn't be peach. It grows what look like cherries, but they never ripen. The problem now is that many leaves are drying up and developing holes. Yeah, you've got a blight on this particular tree, which could be a soggy a result of a soggy soil, but I don't know that it is. I don't really know what advice I can give you, except to say, when these leaves drop off, clean them up. Don't leave them around the base of the tree. And when you go to pruning time, get into pruning time next year, remember that a spray of horticultural oil, or even neem oil, but horticultural oil is better, on that tree will help to prevent whatever this damage is, if it's not caused by wet soil. And those issues, very difficult. Very, very difficult. I wonder what it is. Leaves look too long for a pear. I mean, they're not round enough for a pear. But they don't look like peach leaves, particularly to me, in their shape. It's probably a plum or something. Something or another. Rhea, I'm sorry, I just was reading this about another muscadine grower. My uncle had a 3/4 acre muscadine farm. The biggest thing to me is putting the seed in the fridge for a few months and then plant. I've read that. The idea being that the fruit would fall off the plant in the native environment, and then the weather would turn cold, because it's a fall harvest, you know. And then the weather would turn cold, so that's why you would put it in the refrigerator, to mimic that. Okay. Interesting. But vegetation was his go-to, and he did that with a Sprite bottle. Take the cuttings. So that's good advice. Real good advice. I'm almost always, when you're trying to grow a plant that you expect to keep for 20 or 40 years, I'm always in favor of buying a couple and planting some from seed as well, if you want to try it from seed. Your disappointment level will be much less if you can get all of them to make. And the ones that you buy already growing are going to certainly bear sooner. And you may have a better outcome with them, and you may not. So Dukkahana Moku is the person that we here on the mainland probably most associate with surfing, unless it's, I don't know, some of those creatures in the surfer movies. I don't know those things. I know they're there. But did you know, I think about, you know, I remember reading Tom Sawyer and the Huckleberry Finn and all that, and the raft on the Mississippi and lashing tree trunks together and doing all this stuff. People have been doing that a very long time. I did not know, however, that 200, in the common era, year 200, the Mochi civilization in Peru took reeds and built them into watercraft to help their fishermen get farther away from shore and be stabilized while they were fishing. Can you imagine having to go through that for lunch? I mean, come on. You know, that's a lot. Take reeds and put them together? Good grief.
Motivation now, when you're hungry.
I mean,
right?
When you're hungry, you're going to figure it out one way or the other. But they were known as Caballitos de Totora, and they rode them to navigate over the rough waves out into their fishing areas. Braver than me.
Yeah. You know,
braver
we
than
me. We can
do
this. Yeah. Yeah. They just sat there and talked it out.
Yeah, sure they did. Yeah.
I think we can pull this off. What happens if we don't? Well, we don't know.
We don't know that either.
Yeah,
exactly.
Let's go try.
And it's the other piece. See, it's wood. It's reeds. The first ones, the Polynesians made them out of wood as well. And in fact, later on, after the white people came to Polynesia, they would etch Bible verses into the surfboards. I think this indicates how dangerous this was. We have to take a little prayer with us. We can't just say it in our head. So they were wooden boards, and eventually it became recreational, and that of course led us to make the boards lighter and faster and fiberglass and all of those other things that they have done.
I bet it was an accident too, you know, like one big board came off the raft and there was one guy sitting on it.
Exactly.
And he just gets carried away, and then now all of a sudden he stands up and goes, "Guys, look, I'm surfing."
Here, look what I'm doing.
I invented a new sport.
And now, of course, we think of the United States and Hawaii, but, I mean, don't they like surfing Scotland? I mean, there's all kind of crazy
places.
You need
a wetsuit, but yeah.
There's all kind of crazy places. But those heavy boards that I can remember seeing when I was a kid, they were always in a movie, you know, or something. I didn't live there.
Yeah, as big as a, 57 Plymouth.
I mean, they talk about the putting them on top of the station wagon. That's a big old station wagon. They were about as long as that thing.
As long as the car.
You know? Yeah. So they went on and did the polyurethane foam and then fiberglass, and apparently that's how it all turned into a much, much more fun sport for a lot of people.
Well, and you didn't need four people to carry your board.
No,
it became more of an individual sport.
And your board was more likely to be personalized at that point, despite the Bible verses of the earlier, you know. But it was 1907 when it was introduced to the U.S. mainland.
That's pretty cool.
Yep. They did redwood planks and carved them into surfboards to commemorate that. I'm sure that didn't go over very well.
Yeah, I imagine the redwood people were not happy with that.
Not too happy with that. Not too happy. But I found it fascinating myself. I'm kind of tickled by it. I know that sounds funny, but it's true. There's things that we get and that we come to love, and that we will do anything to make it happen more. And water sports tend to be that way. I can only say that, you know, I only went parasailing once and I'm not going to go again. But there is something about that open water underneath you that is very exciting. And I can see why people will go through all kind of hoops to get that to happen. I do understand. I have to talk about something that I don't want to talk about, but it is really important, especially in this wet weather, my friends. Somebody wrote me a note and said, "Well, since the mosquitoes are attracted to DEET, I'm just not going to wear it anymore." That's not the answer. we still have to put on mosquito repellents, and we still have to find ways that it's... remember when you had to put sunscreen on like every hour? That was the early products. DEET wears off. Takes a little bit longer than an hour, but it wears off, and that's when you're vulnerable. So you just have to keep those sprays around you. Yes, you can go to the other products, and if they work for you, that's great. But if they don't, just reapply the DEET more often than you might think to do it anyway, because this is indeed Mosquito Control Awareness Week, and we all need to be aware, especially with all this water that we're having. My goodness. Does Father's Day always fall on the solstice? I don't think so. This is kind of an interesting alignment of events this weekend. I know that I'll be taking advantage of a couple of seed sales. Eden Brothers is having one, as well as Renee's. I am not, however, I don't care what they tell me, I'm not going to get a parrot. Mm-hmm, that's right.
No, yeah, I don't need a parrot.
One bit me once.
Ooh, those beaks look dangerous.
They are. Now, of course, what I was saying to him wasn't all that nice either.
Mm-hmm.
But they actually use your name.
Yeah.
They're now making the dictionary of parrot words. Kind of scares me. If they team up with the insects, we're all in trouble. Oh, John Fred and the Playboys. He's a real oldie. Stick around.
For decades, Mississippi Land Bank has been rooted in relationships in North Mississippi, such as helping young farmers get started, like Watson Turnip Seed in Sumner.
My farming entity is Watson Planting Company, LLC. I started it in 2022 and had my first crop year shortly thereafter. I linked up with the Mississippi Land Bank for all of my operating loans. It's as easy as 1, 2, 3.
At Mississippi Land Bank, we're here to help you get started, too. Visit us at mslandbank.com.
I'm Jake Mangum. A great team knows how to gel and only gets better over time. Kind of like auto insurance for Farm Bureau Insurance. Over the last 12 months, auto rates have had 2 reductions. And after February 15th, 2026, members will see another reduction of 5%. If you aren't already on the team, there's no better time to join Farm Bureau. Visit msfbins.com to find great new rates on auto insurance. Or contact your local agent to get more details on how you can save. Go with the home team. Go with Farm Bureau.
I'm here.
Soon she's going to fly away. Sadness is her own. Ever suffer.
Thank you, Mr. Stills. Appreciate that. You know, you're very kind to say that this is kind of off topic. You have to realize nothing's ever off topic around here. We bounce from plants to plants and back over to something else and then back to plants. This is so interesting, though. This is cool. His first set of snow skis his dad made from wooden barrel slats. Think about it. You some brave kid. Okay, yeah, I'll put these on my feet cool and go stuff. Down that hill. Sure.
Yeah, when you're a kid, you don't know any better, right?
He was raised on a dairy farm in Grand Lodge, Michigan. You know, well, of course you did, you know. My dad told me I couldn't drive the car until I learned how to change a tire in the driveway. So, of course I did it, you know. I haven't had to do too many since then, but I was always glad for that. And I'll bet you when you got on a set of real skis, you were a mess. It could really take people on if you've been skiing on a series of barrel slats. That's wild. Thanks for telling me that. That makes me feel better. Interesting stuff. Now, this is interesting. This is in Lowndes County. Tom tells us his huge crepe myrtles, easily 20 feet, came with the house. They rarely have very many flowers. Is that another soil testing situation? It wouldn't hurt, but what you may need to do is to do some pruning, but not that heavy-duty pruning we hear about. It still involves getting up there, though, to just trim off some of the tops to stimulate some new growth. And yes, you may find out that you also need either a fertilizer or a different fertilizer. So I would go ahead and advise and do that. You can fertilize crepe myrtles, for even in Lowndes County, you know, right away they'll use it up before they get to the fall. But you probably don't want to do that. You probably just want to take a look at them, enjoy them this year, let all this water get to them, and then take some action next year in winter, get ready for the spring. I've been hearing about folks with crepe myrtles that are literally, whether they have flowers or not, they're just bending over because of all of the water that they're trying to absorb. So that's another issue that you may have seen. You may wonder why your crepe myrtle, which usually has this real upright form, this year has a sort of a droopy form in some places, but it's not wilted. It's just literally overwhelmed by the amount of water that it has taken up, and that's the only place for it to go.
I have the same issue I did early this morning. I finally was like, man, these limbs are hanging down about waist high. You know,
yeah,
a week ago they were, you know, above your head by about 2 feet, and they got long at the base. I was like, yeah, I got to trim some of these off. So, yeah, they weighed a ton. I mean, they just came out and the tree went whoop. It just popped right back up into shape.
Yep. And it's okay to do that, but be aware that that place where you cut is now going to proliferate. It's going to have a whole lot of new growth on it that you will then have to go cut off.
Well, and that's where I over the years, I've kind of had a knuckle there where I know where to kind of go back to, and it always, just exactly as you just said, it comes right back in that spot.
There are some words that you learn in the horticulture vocabulary that are just so much fun, and proliferation is one of them. It means, whoa, we got a lot of growth here, and that makes a lot of sense. It helps us all. There are a couple of things that I wanted to tell you about I'm not going to really get to today, but just know that scientists have turned red lettuce green. This is one of those, why? You know? Didn't we work pretty hard to appreciate the red lettuce? Why do we need it to go green? But the idea is that we would have different nutrients, of course, as we understand. And therefore, if we could make the red nutrients available in a green form, probably some other people would like that. They really would. I'm going to take just a moment of personal privilege today. Wish everybody a happy Father's Day, of course. And be sure that all you dog dads, make sure that you go out and have a good time with your pups today, because it's your day today and Father's Day tomorrow. Some people get to celebrate all of that, you know. That's for true. This is, in fact, my garden baby's 37th birthday. I was hoping I was going to get her in here, but I think she's out. She might be in the garden. She's out pretty busy.
Happy birthday!
We thank you for that. And on a harder thing to say out loud, I've never said this out loud at this point, but tomorrow is 10 years since my husband passed away. So for all of you who have ever dealt with grief, if you haven't, you will eventually. If you care about anybody, you don't like to see them go. But I was reminded of a quote that Stephen Colbert gave that said, no, I didn't want this to happen, but if I'm grateful for my life, I got to be grateful for every day of it. And I am. So I thank all of you very, very much for being here with me today, for the excitement of my daughter's birthday, and for the understanding of what's coming tomorrow is going to be a harder day. But we do celebrate that we knew him. We celebrate, as I hope you do, not that the person is gone, but that they were with you in the first place. It's real important. One last text today. My skateboard was made out of a board we attached old skates to. There you go, see? The kind that you had that you did with your shoes and the skate key. Those of you who don't remember that, look it up, because it is. You think we're pretty crazy too? Sure, go out on the street, just hook these things to your shoes.
Yeah, the little metal things.
But
right?
We did. Yeah, they were they were basically just metal forms that had wheels on them, and the wheels slid back and forth in their little track, so that you could have small feet or big feet, and you'd still be able to put them under your shoes. So we were probably way too young for all of that. But it did eventually get us all to go to the skating rink and learn how to actually skate. And so it was a step in the right direction. But they definitely were dangerous and really fun. And you had your skate key. And that's not like a church key. It's a skate key. I'm so glad that y'all remember stuff that I may remember and may have forgotten about. And yes, I am working on that recipe. Thank you for sending that to me. Getting a whole bunch of work that we don't always think about doing. We don't always give ourselves the opportunity to think about, well, isn't this a better one? You know, I see different. There's a picture of the kitty cat there this morning. That's sweet too. You did a great job with the pictures today. Thank you, Lance. We had a lot of them.
Oh, good stuff.
We are creating an incredible Super Talk Garden Mama Show archive.
So it is an archive.
It truly is. It's an absolute.
It'd be like the Library at Alexandria, worth of photos. And go back so many years, people are going, I didn't even remember growing that.
Well, and that's exactly what happens. You go, you say, oh, yeah, that's right. I did try that variety. I did do this. I did do that. And that's why it's so much fun to be here with you on Saturday and see what you put up there. One more note about C.L. Fornari and her book on hydrangeas. Go and get it, and I'll have it here for you real soon. Next week, we're going to talk about arboretums. Talk about native trees and what your town can do to get some more of them or to recognize the ones that you have. C.L. Fornari took today's photograph, which is basically, wouldn't you rather have a privacy barrier that looked interesting rather than one that, frankly, is just the same tree over and over? It's like everything else, you know, if the one in the middle croaks, what are you going to do? So this is a good opportunity to consider these things. This is also, of course, the time of year when all this stuff goes on sale at the garden centers, whether it's trees and shrubs that you don't intend to plant until November, or whether it's some perennials that you may have overlooked, or some annuals to spruce up the garden. That's what the garden centers are all about right now, because quite frankly, they've gotten all this water too, and you haven't been really getting out there and doing a lot. So now's the time to do it, even if you don't get to plant until later, because everything is at a... Well, frankly, it's all on sale. Why not, huh? Appreciate you today. Thank you so much for being here with me. Thanks for all your good wishes, your good vibes, and frankly, all your great gardening. See you next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of Super Talk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
Ever imagine one company could transform how you live and work? With CSpire, you're connected with advanced technology that enhances everything you do. How you order your morning coffee.
Order my usual.
How you secure your company's data. Even how you turn your backyard into your personal movie theater.
Start movie night.
Own your day on the network for connected living. There's more to see. CSpire. Customer inspired.
Did you know that millions of Americans rely on propane for dependable energy at home, at work, on the road, and on the farm? Propane is a stable energy source to support Americans when the electric grid fails. It also complements renewables like solar and wind, providing constant power when the sun doesn't shine and the wind doesn't blow. Or it's also the ideal energy for critical infrastructure like hospitals and emergency services. Propane. Energy for everyone. For more,
I've seen them.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media production.